Welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. I'm your co-host, John Simperman, with my co-host,
Tim Elshai. Good to see everybody.
Tim, we have a very special guest on the program today. While this may be, we're heading into our 51st or so episode, this is a guest we've been actually trying to get since day one.
Yeah, he's been on our wish list, and sometimes you got to wait for the right time to make the ask.
Yeah.
And this was the right time because Mr. Bob Rich has a movie coming out. But I think for everyone, we should back up and give a little background here on Bob Rich, because it's about way more than a movie.
Yeah, you know, we're assuming most of our listeners, this program, Skin in the Game, is recorded in Buffalo, New York. But we do have listeners well beyond the boundaries and borders of Buffalo. So most folks would know the Rich family from Rich Products.
Rich Products is a multi-billion dollar frozen food company.
Global.
They've been to bakery. One of their biggest clients is Walmart. So, for example, if you've had a dessert from Walmart ever, pretty good chance you've had something from Rich Products. If you've eaten in a cafeteria, if you've eaten at any restaurant, there's a pretty good chance that you've had a whipped topping, you've had a dessert, you've had some bread, you've had something from Rich Products. It's a company that was formed decades ago by Bob Rich Sr., our Bob's now late father. And then Bob took the reins from his dad. We'll get a little more into that in the conversation.
Right. Major employer in the region.
And they have a whole other arm to this company, too. We were just talking about the food, but there's Rich Entertainment Group, which owns three minor league baseball teams, as you know, we've described in this program with Mike Buczkowski, who is the president there. They do Broadway producing. Mindy Rich, who is the chair of Rich Products, and she's married to Bob, is also a prolific and very accomplished Broadway producer. A husband and wife team, Bob and Mindy, who do a lot beyond their core business, too. So Bob is the author of 7, soon to be 8 books. He works with some major publishers on these books. Certainly does it out of passion. He donates the money to charities. He's made his living with a family business, but has a passion for telling stories and a passion for fishing. And so that brings us to Looking Through Water, which is a novel Bob wrote 10 years ago. It's a story about a father and a son. We'll get into this in the interview with him. A famous actor read that book, back when it came out about a decade ago. Had his people get in touch with Bob and said, hey, have you ever considered turning this book into a movie? So that's a cool story that we're going to tell. But suffice it to say, Looking Through Water is a movie that just premiered in New York and L.A. and is now being shown around the country.
Yeah, that's great. I also want to talk to Bob a little bit about Buffalo Bisons baseball and their affiliation with the Toronto Blue Jays, who are having a great year. And there's a lot of Buffalo talent that's been groomed here to help them on the field. So I want to also touch a little bit on minor league baseball.
I'm glad we will. And, full disclosure, it'll come up, I'm sure, in the conversation with Bob. I worked for him 30 years ago with the Buffalo Bisons. I was a little Cub reporter writing for their Bison Gram. It's kind of interesting. When Bob bought the Bisons, he was working for his dad. Called his dad and said, hey, Dad, I want to buy a minor league baseball team. And he was told, you can do it, but you've got to be able to do it on your lunch break. So basically, you can take your lunch to run a baseball team. Decades later, he's got 2 more teams and a whole lot of stories to go with it. Speaking of minor league baseball, I clipped a piece out of the New York Times that I'm going to put you on the spot, John. I'm going to run this by you because there's a pretty cool piece in the Times about how Major League Baseball could enhance its fan appeal by taking some lessons from the Savannah Bananas. I know you are an admirer of the Savannah Bananas.
Yeah.
We're going to kind of rapid fire this here. Number one, put fans first.
That should be rule number one on any sports team executives.
Seems kind of obvious, but is MLB doing that?
Not as much as the Savannah Bananas are. That's for sure.
Next one, make pregame an event. So the entertainment starts when you walk through those turnstiles.
Yeah. You're starting to see that. I mean, the Savannah Bananas, it's a bit easier because they own the only team, in this case, the 2 teams in their league. So you can have consistent experiences. going to a Cleveland Guardians game is a different experience than going to a New York Mets game. And I think each club has to provide that pre-event experience a little differently.
And I think they're either beyond or they're adding teams beyond the two now. That leads me to the third point here. Market your players better.
And we've had discussions with a lot of guests here on Skin in the Game, both Major League Baseball as well as the National Hockey League. All of those clubs and leagues are working harder to get their players comfortable with social media and getting them comfortable with promoting themselves. What's interesting is when it comes to the Savannah Bananas is they really draft their players, or I should say recruit their players, based upon their skill as well as their media following. So they're looking for characters.
So here's another one. I thought this was interesting. It's rethink the schedule. What the writer points out is that the Bananas don't play Monday through Wednesday. They try to focus on certain nights of the week.
Right, right. Well, again, they're playing 45 games and Major League Baseball is playing 162. So it's kind of comparing apples to oranges there. Family-oriented night, i.e. a weekend, it's much easier. But Major League Baseball doesn't have that luxury.
Two more. Be creative with the rules.
Yes, to a degree. What's really interesting, and I've had, you know, Major League Baseball, and I think it was in that article too, when the Bananas started, they didn't take them seriously. That, oh, this will be a fad, this will go away. Well, guess what? Now they're filling up 127,000 people at a NASCAR venue. But I do think things like the Bananas and things like minor league baseball, be it the Buffalo Bisons or the Batavia Muck Dogs, there's things that you see start in those leagues that are eventually adopted by baseball. And I do think the pitch count, I do think the slightly larger bases, I think those were things that they saw happening in other leagues, and in this case, minor leagues, that they did adopt. Rules are always going to continue to change. And I think there's even a few rules that they've talked about from quote-unquote banana ball that they might look to somehow integrate into Major League Baseball. But I think it would start in minor leagues. Then if it still works, it goes to the big time.
So I'm going to give you one more, but just for those of you out there, if you want to check out this story, it was published in The Athletic and New York Times. It's called Off the Wall Banana Ball, offers tips for MLB on enhancing fan appeal. It's by Brittany Giroli, and I hope, Brittany, I'm saying your name correctly, but excellent writer, excellent piece. John, here's the last one, and this is based on the idea that the Bananas are a competitive organization. In other words, the teams on the field are trying to win. While they might seem like a baseball version of basketball's Harlem Globetrotters, they are not choreographed. And so the advice is remember your mission.
Yeah, well, it's the only place I somewhat disagree is I do think you do need to give credit to the Harlem Globetrotters for improv sports, talented baseball players, and they are playing a game, they are scoring runs, and they're trying to win. But when you have a pitcher on stilts who's over 10 feet tall throwing the ball, you don't take yourself too seriously. It is a gimmick. So I do want to also give credit to the Globetrotters for what they did to, quote-unquote, create improv sports. And what they did for the NBA, same thing the Bananas can do for MLB.
Fair enough. Okay, and with that, now this is going to be not too big a leap because Bob Rich is a minor league baseball owner who knows a thing or two about sports as entertainment. But we're going to talk a little bit of baseball and a lot of fishing and a little bit of Hollywood. Spoiler alert, you're going to hear a little bit about Michael Douglas when we are back next on Skin in the Game with Bob Rich. Stay tuned.
I'm excited to see, like, she said this, well, he said that.
The truth will come out.
Wondering what the buzz is? What's the hot goss? Whatever it is, we're talking about it on Group Chat, your weekly connection to the unpredictable, weird, and wonderful world of pop culture. From film, music, theater to food, blockbusters, and beyond. Every week with Tiffany Bentley and her revolving panel of pop culture enthusiasts. Listen to Group Chat on Fridays at 10 a.m. and Saturdays at noon on BTPM NPR.
I'm very excited.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Skin in the Game. And John, I'm pleased to introduce you to our guest joining us over Zoom, Mr. Bob Rich. John, meet Bob.
Hey, Bob. Great to meet you. Our paths have crossed here in Western New York and, and Northeast Ohio, and great to get you on our program today.
Well, your hockey reputation precedes you, John. Nice to see you.
Good to see you as well.
Yeah, you are both men of the Buffalo Sabres when we look at your background. And okay, so Bob, I've got to ask you, we're here primarily today to talk about Looking Through Water, which you've written a number of books, fiction and nonfiction. And now you've got a movie out there, and I'm just wondering, let me jump to the end here. What is next after this?
Well, a lot of people have been asking, and I've got a lot of ideas, and I was approached by a couple people about doing a series for television, which trying to catch my breath after the premiere of Looking Through Water, our movie. So I think I better take a little time and think that one over, Tim.
I know your background from Rich Products and Rich Stadium and obviously the Bisons and beyond, but I wasn't as familiar with your writing background. When did you pick up the pen?
Thinking back on it, John, a lot of my college professors would probably be surprised that I could write a book, let alone read a book. And the fact that it was turned into a movie, I think, would really shock a lot of people. But I've always been, probably like you guys in broadcasting, I've always been fascinated with words. And I love watching words be put together in well, and I've enjoyed watching people and listening to people and reading people who take their time with the using words. And so it's always been a love of mine. And as younger people have come into our business, it's given me a little more time to write. And so it's my passion for writing has always been there. I've had a little more time to express myself in that area.
You're an inspiration to me because I've joked with Tim here, who is a writer, that I've got some ideas for books. Mm-hmm. And the fact that in your busy career and all the businesses you're involved with, the fact that you followed the passion and took the time is quite the inspiration for me and I think a few others.
Yeah, Bob, for John's sake and anyone else wondering out there, where do you find the time? How do you find the time?
Well, we've always kept ourselves busy, and Mindy and I were always in the category of early in the office and late to leave. So we've always had busy schedules. And I think we've also had eclectic schedules where, in addition to working in the company, we've always been passionate about other things as well. Mindy, especially for Broadway, and me for writing. So we've managed to find time and working it out hours. We actually get an awful lot done as we travel on location, and our company has grown around the world, so we've had plenty of time to work as we travel.
For people who aren't familiar with the breadth or scope of Rich Products, everyone out there can go look it up, but suffice it to say, Bob, if there's a continent other than probably Antarctica, Rich Products has a significant presence on it, right?
Well, ironically, Tim, our international sales started in Canada, in Fort Erie. My first job when I came out of college after I did my Armed Forces Reserve service, my first job was to build a plant in Canada, in Fort Erie. It was very comfortable for me because I spent a lot of time growing up in Canada. Traveling across Canada to build an organization was a labor of love for me. And I watched us go from three people in the organization to over 400. And it was our Canadian operation has always had a special place in my heart.
And I know you and Mindy and your extended family, right, spend a lot of time in Canada just in the summers over the years, right? So it really is like another home to you?
When I was growing up, we always spent summers in Canada and with a home in Canada and also going to summer camps in Canada. My first time fishing was with my dad in a 14-foot rowboat on Lake Erie. And so that was my first taste of what it was like to feel a fish bite on the other end of a line. And I continued to fish when I went to camp in Ontario up in the Algonquin. And I think that's where I got my first real experience in fishing, and that love of fishing, grew and got a little more sophisticated, I think, as I started to fish for bigger fish in saltwater down in the Florida Keys. But I've always really considered myself very much a Canadian as well as American as far as where I spent my time, especially my early time as a child.
That's the asset that we have here in this region. You know, we're surrounded by two, of the Great Lakes. There's some great rivers. Cattaraugus runs right through this region. Obviously, the Finger Lakes, so we are truly blessed in this region, both Southern Ontario as well as Western New York, with some unbelievable venues to lay out a line.
Well, I used to go out with friends, and we would we'd go out after work. Guys like Jimmy Klepfer from Klepfer Buick was a great guy, and he sold a lot of cars in the area. And we'd go out after work and drink a couple cold libations, and we always had fun catching and releasing a lot of fish. But I never realized what a great fishery it was until one year where we were holding a celebrity tournament to raise money to find a cure for cystic fibrosis, and kind of combining fishing with a charity, which was great. We brought in a lot of well-known anglers, and I got to fish with the incredible, famous Bill Dance, who's probably the best known bass fisherman in the world. About halfway through the trip, Bill Dance said to me, he said, Bob, the Great Lakes and this lake is the best smallmouth bass fishing in the world. I said, Bill, you're just another fisherman who tells lies. And he said, no, this is the truth. This is, if I had one place to catch smallmouth bass, it'd be right here on this lake. And that really put things in perspective for me is, how fortunate we all are. Sometimes, Tim, I think we take for granted.
And Tim, you and I have talked about on this program so often how we do take things for granted, right? Again, fresh water and four distinct, beautiful seasons. So, Bob, I think you're right. I think sometimes when something's so close to under your nose, you take it for granted. And we have that here in this region. We have the proximity to our great neighbors up north. I think it's time we might have to talk to our friends at Visit Buffalo Niagara and bring in some more of those national Bassmasters tournaments, right? And also help turn fishing into an economic driver for the region.
And that's not a new concept at all to you, right? I mean, that's something you've seen as an opportunity for this region for a long time.
It really is another challenge. And, a lot of people have an old view of fishermen where they're sitting on a dock somewhere waiting for the fish to come to them. But, really, as far as a sport and going out and hunting for, the fish that you're going to catch and release, to catch two or three different species it's really very difficult. And I'll tell you, the hockey players who come through, this area, whether they play for the Leafs or the Sabres, they get it. We see a lot of them, Rob Ray is a prime example of a guy who's a passionate angler and a lot of the guys who really spend a lot of time on the water. And the other thing, too, they all get it. They understand catch and release, and they understand conservation, John, that mm-hmm. We're not killing these fish, but we want them to be around for our children and our grandchildren. And I think that's great for the area as well.
You brought up a great point about kind of the stereotypical kind of fisher person and fishing experience versus what's actually happening right now with fishing. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but was digging through some statistics from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Organization. And I think 2024 was probably the largest participation year for fishing. And by the way, the great news is it's trending up 10% with females. It's up 14% with African Americans. And best of all, it's not the two old guys. It's actually 6 to 17-year-olds. There's like over 13 million anglers, as you would say. So it's a growing participation base. It's more diverse participation base. And you've seen that, you know, in your travels as well.
Absolutely. And people have been shocked when they find out that the county of Erie has issued more fishing and hunting licenses than any other county in the country. And that's not on a per capita basis, just by percentages. That's more actual licenses. So I think that there's a growing awareness of whether it's people moving into the area or, as you say, you know, the women getting involved, the growth of especially fly fishing, that's thanks to women getting involved and equipment manufacturers realizing that that's a viable market and making equipment like waders that are made that fit women comfortably and that they enjoy wearing. So it's a growth sport. It's and it's fun to see it, fun to be part of.
John, have you ever fly fished?
I did one time in Lake Placid. It was part of when ESPN used to host its outdoor games, which were a great couple days. And yes, ESPN hosted me fly fishing. I loved it. Unfortunately, I haven't got back into it, but coming out of this conversation, I'm going to.
Yeah. And Bob, I don't know if you'll remember this specific experience you and I shared, Bob. A number of years ago, probably 10 years ago, I spent a number of days with you over, you know, a large amount of time writing a piece on you for the Buffalo News. I know you know that. You may not remember this because it was pretty forgettable, unless you're me. You tried to teach me to fly fish. We were out on a boat in Lake Erie, and you tried, and you tried, and you tried. And the technique is tough. It takes a lot of work.
Well, I remember when we had Johnny Morris here from Bass Pro Shop, and I think you were part of one of those expeditions, and you know, and it was tough at the time because I don't think a lot of people realized where fly fishing and sport fishing was going, and it was we were trying to figure out alternative uses for the auditorium. After the new stadium auditorium was built. And as it turned out, Bass Pro didn't come downtown, but they bought Cabela's out on the I-190. So it all had a happy ending. The only problem is, Tim, we didn't get you. But I think we got John out there.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of time. You're still pretty young. We'll get you.
I'm willing to give it a second shot. I need to redeem myself because it was.
Well, here's the other thing, and this is a sports business show. And what I've heard and what I've read, and Bob, maybe you can help reinforce this, is fly fishing in many ways is becoming the new golf. And what I mean by that is, you know, there are, you know, business professionals, men and women, who will go fly fishing for a morning, an afternoon, and talk business versus doing it in many cases traditionally on the golf course. So it's an interesting trend that I'm hearing and seeing, that fly fishing is also a way to get business done.
Well, John, in all due respect to my golfer friends, and I'm a recovering golfer, so, but in all due respect, I can carry on a four-way conversation, starting with the argument on the first tee, who gets how many strokes. But I think the sport of fishing lends itself, it's much less structured, and it lends itself to those kind of conversations. And I think you're right. And especially if you, you know, you have an opportunity to be involved in fishing for a good cause, like we all were. I think, you know, we set out to find a cure for CF, and we were just one of many groups, and we never found a cure. We did find medication that lets sufferers live a normal lifetime. That in itself is a victory that I think a lot of people who remember those old bass eye tournaments that we run, that's something that a lot of fishermen in the area can be very proud of. And we, by the way, have a wonderful, wonderful collection of guides in both the U.S. and Canada who are ready to go and teach you know, families how to get involved, and that might be a little nervous about getting involved in the sport. They're out there and they're ready to go and ready to teach them how to get a line out of the boat.
Bob, I know fishing has been a tool for you, speaking of business and networking and just relationships. You have met so many people through this sport. I know that because I read The Fishing Club, one of your books, and from talking to you. But I mean, we're talking Ted Williams, President George Herbert Walker Bush, Bush number 41. I mean, the list goes on, right?
I think I found that out for myself too, Tim, when one of my books was searching to find out if there's a common purpose, why we all fish. Is there a reason that, you know, why we all love doing what we do? Because it's not always pretty out there. I mean, sometimes you know, it rains, sometimes you get skunked, you don't find a fish or whatever. So I was looking for, why do we do this to ourselves sometimes? And I interviewed about a lot of fishermen, and I found out hundreds of reasons why we fish, but I was able in the end to narrow it down to one reason why we fish. And I shared that in a book that it's in its second edition, and it's called Simply Why We Fish. I don't want any spoiler alert, so I'm going to challenge your viewers to go out and find the book on Amazon or in the bookstores if they want to find out why.
Yeah, you know, I was about to ask you that question. So I'm going to pivot now and ask you a different fishing book question. So years ago, I think this also goes back about 10 years, I read one of the earliest copies of your novel, Looking Through Water, which of course is a book that uses fishing as a storytelling tool, right? I loved it, but there will certainly be a lot of people out here who are interested in seeing the movie, would like to read the book, but don't yet know the story. So give us that quick pitch on the story.
Well, you know, 30 years ago, believe it or not, it's actually now 34 years ago, there was a movie made that many of people remember as if it were yesterday, and it was A River Runs Through It, and it was a family adventure story, but people still remember it as if it was yesterday, and it was a very popular movie, and it starred Brad Pitt, and the effect of that book was to raise sales in the fly fishing industry by 60% 2 years in a row. And a lot of people in the business were saying, well, why don't we get a book written on fly fishing in saltwater where the fish are bigger, the water is bigger, maybe more dangerous sometimes. And so that question was gnawing on me. And I always wanted to write a novel, and I wanted to write something that was meaningful. And I wasn't interested in writing a fishing book per se, but I wanted to write an adventure story, and I wanted to write a story that featured families and that talked about fathers and sons and talked about brothers and talked about relationships in families and the human condition. I'd always seen fishing as an opportunity for people to regenerate those kind of relationships. I likened it to line being ripped apart and being able to be tied back together. And so I thought to myself that this would be a great opportunity to use fishing as a backdrop and write a book, which I did. And at first it came out, it was going to be called Blood Knot. And it was going to be talking about blood knots, tying a special knot that would tie lines together. And that was a little esoteric. And the publishers who were interested in the book said, we don't think that really does the book justice. So we came up with the name Looking Through Water, which is what we do when we fish. We look through the water, just like we look through life, and to gain clarity. And so that gave me a title, and I used a family to use, actually, in the book, five generations, and looked at families that were in conflict and how water could be a healing agent. And something very interesting came out when the book was published. I found out when the book came out in 2015, I found out that writing books is now become a two-way street. In the first book I wrote came out in 2001. And you write a book, then you go on and I write another book. But by 2015, our readers expected much more. They want a two-way conversation with the authors. And it was really interesting to hear from other people who were saying, boy, I wish I'd told my father this, or my son and I never connected. And the book has been so helpful. And the movie, which just premiered last week, is off to the races. We're getting all kinds of these kind of comments. And the reviews have been good. And people are pointing out that this is exactly what the book is doing. It's making people think. It's bringing people together, not only families, but women are coming into it too, saying, don't forget about us. We had relationships with our mothers. We have relationships with our fathers as well. And you're giving us food for thought. So far, Tim and John, it's, you know, it's just out. It's just barely out. We're going to be introducing the movie in Buffalo at the North Park Theater on September 26th. And I'm looking forward to being there for some Q&A, but it's doing just what I hoped it would do. It's getting people to think and getting them to reflect and getting them, in many cases, to take action. It's a little wordy, I apologize.
No, that's great. And no, it's really, I think it goes to show how, whether it's fishing, whether it's hockey, whatever the sport is, people can channel that emotion and share those memories through sport, right? Bob, just kind of for our listeners, 2015, the book was written, obviously some really strong reviews. Then what is the evolution then? What's the process for that to become a screenplay? Did they approach you? Did you approach them? Just how did it now go out to the silver screen?
Well, I think, John, that it's, and maybe other people who've written it, so it's sometimes, it's not always, but sometimes it's in the back of your mind. You're thinking, you know, you start out and you see it laid out in the, because we all, whether we read or write, we all go to movies too. And I could see it in form of a movie. And I was happy to find a screenplay writer who was like-minded, we shared in a lot of ideas. I knew a lot more about fishing, but he knew a lot more about screenplay writing. And so when he signed on, it was very helpful to put our heads together. But back to the process, John, so much of this is hurry up and wait. I mean, this, well, I wrote this in, you know, many years ago, and then the book came out in 2015, and it was only a few years ago that we got a call from Michael Douglas's people and saying, you know, that Michael had read the book and he was looking to do a book with his son Cameron. He loved this book, and he loved, for just the reasons we were talking about, and he wondered if the screenplay or if the book was available for movies. And I'd kind of forgotten that was in the back of my mind when it had first been written. And all of a sudden we were off to the races. And it's, I liken it to the Army. It's kind of hurry up and wait. It's, for me, it was like a dream come true. You know, a lot of times when you're writing things, you go into a room like I'm in now, and it's you're away from noise, you're away from the family and it's a place where you can be reflective. And then all of a sudden, you go through all this process, and you're sitting in a room with 200 people, and the lights go down. And here are your characters up, you know, in these big things. And you say, oh, my goodness, what have I done? Is this, the hair on the back of your neck stands up, and it's something you never forget. And I went through that. And it's a rush, but it's scary in a lot of ways.
Let me dig deeper into that with you, Bob. You and I have known each other a long time. The Bison Graham newspaper, which for the many people out there who may not be old enough to remember it, is a great newspaper that the Bisons had back in the 1990s. And Bob and Mike Bellani, his general manager at the time, were nice enough to hire me to write for it. So thank you, Bob, for that. You seriously, you got me started as a writer.
You earned every penny of it.
Well, thank you.
And all the fresh and ready milkshakes that you could drink as well.
Milkshakes. I'll take you up on it. I appreciate it. You know, but I'm thinking back to that time, and this is all going to lead to take us into the moment of being at that premiere. I mean, back at that time, you know, Rich Products was, I don't know what the revenues were back then, but it was becoming a billion or a multi-billion-dollar global business, just off the cusp of, you know, chasing after a Major League Baseball franchise for Buffalo, and came very, very, very close. Went on to really play a key role in helping keep the Buffalo Sabres here in Buffalo, so John could come work for them, and and also so, you know, so many fans could enjoy them. You and Mindy, and I know Mindy's in the lead on this for sure, became Broadway producers. You wrote a lot of books. You've done a lot. And I'm wondering, but even there, I'm thinking it's got to be a heady experience to get a call from Michael Douglas's people to say, hey, Michael and his son Cameron want to do a movie together. There you are on a red carpet with those guys and so many other talented people. So long way around to asking, what is that like for you? And of all the great experiences you've had, where does it rank?
You're very kind, Tim. But let me start with Michael, because I was thinking the other day, and he had sent me a very nice note after the premiere in New York City, and I was thinking that wouldn't it be great if the three of us, you, Tim, and John, and I got to meet all of the athletes and stars that we cheer for before we cheer for them, and instead of finding out we cheered for somebody who was a real jerk, you know, and Michael Douglas, it basically is everything you'd want him to be. He's the consummate professional. He's a nice guy. When he's on a set, everybody works. It gives it their best because they want it to be good for him as well as for themselves. And he's thoughtful and caring, and he's what they call generous with, he'll step aside for young people to make their career. So I really enjoyed the opportunity of getting to be with him. And I've been blessed in my career. I think, Tim, you know, you were part of that battle to get a major league club. And I remember that was a 9-year, that was a 9-year struggle. And the movie took a while too. But I was thinking about it after COVID came along, and lo and behold, the Blue Jays came to town in Buffalo and they played part of a season. And then next thing of all things to happen, Americans weren't allowed to go into Canada. So we had them we had the Blue Jays in what used to be Pilot Field and then now Salem Field. We had them in for the first part of the season. I said, I made it. We got a major league team for Buffalo, albeit only for half a season. But ironically, the way things work out, I think that the end result, you know, it's like being, you got to be careful what you wish for. And I think the wonderful success of the Bills, and I don't want to jinx them, but boy, that comeback against the Ravens was outstanding. And the Sabres, when I look up and down that roster on the combination we're going to see on the ice with young and old, and then the Bisons, you know, being able to supply the Jays with the quality talent to put them in the hunt in the American League East, I think, it really calls to question whether we could have afforded 3 major league teams in Buffalo. And I think sometimes things work out for the best, and it's not what you plan for, but it's been fun to watch all the Bisons doing so well for the Blue Jays. The one sour note on the whole year is just the fact that so many of our Canadian friends and pals have felt disenfranchised and haven't felt comfortable coming across the border. And that's been a very sad footnote to this year for me, because we consider ourselves part of the Blue Jays family. And hopefully next year we'll have a turnaround on that, where the Blue Jays fans will feel comfortable coming across the border to watch the Blue Jays in the future. And hopefully we'll all be wearing our World Series Blue Jay paraphernalia when that happens.
Yeah,
life's been good. Yeah, you guys, life's been good.
Life is great here, and so much of it, in all seriousness, contributions from your family and Rich Products, as well as being just a major employer, on, like you said, on both sides of the border. And getting back to your point on sometimes, you know, you hope for a major league team, but it doesn't come through. I do think you're spot on, because Tim's asked me a few times, you know, Cleveland, right? I mentioned my old hometown is, you know, why don't they have an NHL team? And it's not for lack of the passion of the fans, but it really comes down to the dilution of that corporate support. And even a market like Cleveland, while it could support and does support three teams, it couldn't support four. So I think you're spot on. I think they could fill up a building with fans, but again, just not that Fortune 500, you know, corporate support. When
I know,
you know,
you're right, John. And look at the Pirates. I mean, they get out of the cellar in their division in the National League. If they get out of the cellar in their division, they could probably have a parade Pittsburgh. And I don't want that for Buffalo. I mean, you do your best, and the best thing that you can hope for is that that you have any players, you know, available still on your team after they become free agents.
And, right.
You know, I don't think Buffalo is ready for that. I still love watching the Kiss camera and watching the kids run the bases on Sundays. I think we've got a good situation with AAA in Buffalo.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Fills a major need, which is affordable family entertainment. Tim and I are both very passionate about the game of baseball. So I think Buffalo is in a great spot. I think the affiliation with our neighbors in Toronto is spot on. It really helps, you know, just like the Bills are building their relationship with Canadian fans. And now it's a matter of the Canadian fans can build their affiliation with the Bison. So I think it's a great and strategic partnership.
Yeah. And we've struggled this year, but we'll be back. And boy, that lineup, you go up and down the lineup, and they've had injuries with Springer getting hurt a lot, and that the outfield is had, you know, they've had a lot of, you know, one guy after another's gone down, and there have been an ex-Bison there to settle them down. And now that their pitching's turned around, the bullpen's doing better, I think they could be good. And so sports business. Fishing is a sport. I'm looking through waters coming to the Buffalo theaters, and I'm coming there to do Q&A, and I just hope that people come out, watch a movie, don't bring any fresh fruit to throw at the at the book author. Check your fresh fruit before you come in
I doubt that's going to happen.
I hope they enjoy the movie, and I hope they'll maybe it'll give everybody something to think about. I hope it's something enjoyable.
Well, just like sports and fishing and all sports bring people together, we all know it at TV and movies, a story well told does that too. And Bob, I'll be seeing you there for the Q&A. Rumor has it I might be hosting that with you, according to some sources. So I'm looking forward to that. And thanks for joining us here today.
Well, you guys are great. And I appreciate your including me. And from now on, I'll always wear the number 51. I mean, your 51st guest, right?
Well, it took us 50 to get, you know, we were practicing before we got to you. So now we're ready.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you needed to do that.
We hope we did it justice. Hey, listen, thank you, Bob. We'll see you soon.
It's who should practice. Well, I look forward to seeing you later this month.
You got it. Hey, take care.
Thanks, Bob.
All the best to you guys. Take care. Thank you.
Bye. We'll be back right after this.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of State Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there with trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music. It's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Welcome back to Skin in the Game. And Tim, thank you for bringing in Mr. Bob Rich into the show.
Yeah, I hope you didn't mind the 30-year-old stories about fishing. And well, that's a 10-year-old story, but then 30-year-old stories about baseball. We go back a long ways. Yeah. It was nice to be able to introduce you to him.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I know of Mr. Rich.
Yeah, and, you know him for sure.
And the contributions that his company and his employees make to this region. So it was just really an honor to have him on the program. I didn't ask him, but I don't think he has time to golf because I think his choice between golf and fishing is obviously.
It occurred to me that I don't think I've ever asked him whether he golfs, but we would know. He's written a number of books, as we described. One of them is called The Right Angle, and it's Bob's journey through the world of sports and hockey and owning a baseball team and starting a handball team. And yeah, I mean, golf doesn't play as, I'd have to flip through the book, but it does not play as strong a role. There's something about Bob, if people really want to understand him, there's a statue that I think he still has it behind his desk at Rich Products World headquarters in Buffalo. And it's a statue of Don Quixote, the fictional character, riding a horse. You know, have you ever, not to put you on the spot, have you ever read that book?
I have not.
I have not either. It's a long, long, long book. And I did the Cliff Notes version. I'm sorry, Bob. Bob has read the book. I'm guessing Bob's read the book multiple times. And the theme of Don Quixote's life, because you're wondering where I'm going with this, life is a quest. And you collect great experiences and you try things and they don't all work out. Mm-hmm. If you want to understand this guy, that's really what it is. Like, most people would be satisfied building a multi-billion dollar business and then enjoying the fruits of doing so. He's out there writing books. And by the way, if people are wondering, he writes the books himself. I don't know that that's necessary to say, but I've been asked that multiple times because usually when you see people of means, people of wealth or notoriety, you wonder, are they working with another writer? He's a writer. And he's a really good writer.
Yeah, and I did not know that, quite frankly. So shame on me. I'm thrilled now that I do know that. And what's interesting about his books, and he made the point too, at least the couple of them that are around the sport of fishing, is they're not fishing books. They're books about life where fishing is kind of the foundation of the story, but they're not fishing books.
Yeah, fishing is a setting and fishing. I mean, Bob absolutely views fishing as a sport. Like, if you're an angler, you're a competitor. It is, I think, fair to say it's like the way golfers view golf. If you have a great round, you're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
Not that Bob would ever lie about the size of a fish he caught, or if he's a golfer about, a hole in one, but golfers stretch stories a little bit. We know, people who are fishing do too. It's part of the culture. It's quite similar to that, but really it's a form of bonding. And in the case of Looking Through Water, his book, now Michael Douglas movie, it's about a father and son story, right? But fishing has been a source for him of friendships. And you pointed out something that I hadn't thought about quite as much, maybe ever, to be honest, is fishing as a form of doing business.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is a thing. And a lot of folks can't, dedicate the time to practice for golf, right? Because if you're out there playing, you don't want to throw up a snowman on every other hole. That could be, and for you non-golfers, that's a triple bogey on a five. But the sport of fishing, while it is challenging, I think the curve to, improve and the curve to not embarrass yourself is a little smaller than, dedicating so much time to the game of golf just to be presentable.
Well, and you're also not slowing anybody down.
Right.
If you don't, to put it bluntly, if you don't catch any fish.
Right.
Actually, you're leaving them for others.
That's right. That's right. I wanted to do a deeper dive, but unfortunately, we didn't have enough time with Bob Rich to go there. But we started to do is kind of the economic opportunities with fishing. And what I mean by that is here we are in Western New York, in Southern Ontario. We are rich, no pun intended, with natural resources, especially for fishing. And what can we do as a region to promote tourism around fishing? Because, you know, people are coming in for a couple of days and, you know, a place to stay and rent a car and have dinner, have drinks. So I do think, and we should talk to our regional friends in the tourism business about how can we leverage our natural resources, in this case, fresh water, and really use fishing as a means to drive tourism.
And that, you know, combine that, John, with, you know, the stats that you shared about how participation in fishing, and you said particularly amongst younger people,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Kids and teenagers is going up. I mean, and there's a great opportunity there, short and medium term, but also thinking long term. Think about climate change, migration patterns because of climate change. Every reliable, you know, study or analysis out there says that the region we are sitting in, and you know, many of you out there listening and watching are also sitting in, Southern Ontario, Western New York, the Great Lakes region, Cleveland, Detroit, you know, Chicago, and the Great Lakes are going to be a vital place. And, you know, there's going to be a lot that draws people here with that fresh water. But in terms of sports, recreation, and frankly, human bonding and the ability to sit and talk, regardless of what else is going on in the world, fishing offers that opportunity
too,
right? Yeah. So I'm glad we did this episode at this time too. I mean, our timing here was and is because Bob has a movie coming out. If you're in the Buffalo region, you can go see it this next week if you're listening to this right away. But there's a much bigger, I think, picture here with fishing.
Right. And again, the title of the book and the movie,
Looking Through Water.
And I would encourage our listeners to look for that. And hopefully with these premieres that are happening in New York, Buffalo, and other markets, that this film and this story will also be coming to a big and small screen near you.
Yeah, and you can look it up online. Looking Through Water has a website where you can find out where to go watch it. If you are in the Western New York area or Southern Ontario, North Park Theater in Buffalo will have it the week of September 22nd.
Well, thank you to Bob Rich for joining us on Skin in the Game, and thank you for tuning in. This is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thanks for listening.